I'm joining the podcast, singer from bands such as Biogenesis, Jacob's Dream, Vultures Gathering, more recently. I have Chaz Bond. Chaz, thank you for joining the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
So we were talking before here, you're a big football fan. So people think, yeah, you're all about music, but you got other stuff you're interested in, which is really cool. You're a diehard Bengals fan. So you've suffered through some years. People can relate to you.
Yes, I have.
So you're from the Ohio area, you were saying. Is that where you grew up your whole life?
Yeah, I grew up in Dayton, Ohio, which is about a 45-minute drive from the Bengals stadium. And my dad was a big Bengals fan. And I wasn't really that into sports when I was in elementary school. But as I got to about 10, you know, around that age, Bengals were on TV all the time. Their helmets looked cool, and they were actually good back then.
And, were you ever into like any other Cincinnati sports? Well, there's really only like the Reds, but did you ever get into
other stuff? I never. I don't know why. I mean, I played soccer in school. I tried out basketball. It wasn't really my thing. Nothing else really caught on. I don't know why. It's just a football guy. No idea why. It just kind of turned out that way.
Did you play sports at all yourself besides soccer, or did you ever get into it?
I played 1 year in football, but I'm kind of a shorter guy.
Yeah.
You know, I tried to play defensive end, and then the offensive tackle was like three of me, you know. I don't know. It was kind of weird. I guess football, I could have been a short tight end maybe.
I played one season of football too when I was young, and it was not for me. I was a baseball guy. I was meant for baseball and not football. I'm too much of a wimp.
And my love growing up was martial arts mostly.
Do you still do that, or is that something you did for quite a while?
I wish I could say I was still practicing. I haven't really trained in probably over 15 years.
What kind of martial arts were you into? I know there's totally different kinds, but.
Yeah, I mean, I did Genwa. It's a Japanese hard style of karate called Genwa Kai. But I spent a lot of years doing a ninjutsu, also from, you know, also a Japanese martial art. And I taught for years, and I used to have the whole six pack and the, you know, and all that. I used to be real.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I didn't start.
What happened? No, I'm just joking.
I know.
It's called getting old.
It's called getting old, and it's called not training anymore.
I did a lot of ninja gaiden when I was younger, so pretty much same thing, right?
Sure.
Not really. So when did you actually get into music? What was your early musical influences, whether just stuff you loved or somebody that influenced you later on?
You know, honestly, my mom tells me that I was trying to sing songs all the time, even before I can remember. I would hear, you know, Hot Blooded or something like that, and I'd be trying to sing it and not getting the words fully right or whatever. I remember, I mean, as early as I can remember, I remember for some reason wanting to be a singer. I don't really know where that desire came from. Maybe it was something I was born with, or maybe it was a lifelong calling, you know, I don't know. But, you know, early on, I had no idea what I was doing, but I just had a desire, a really strong desire to do it. As far as influences, I had an aunt, still have an aunt.
She's still here.
She was the youngest of my mom's siblings, and she turned me on to Kiss, and she gave me some Kiss albums, and, you know, she kind of started off the gateway into rock and roll and heavy metal. And
how old were you then?
Oh, geez. Seven-ish.
Pretty young. You know? Okay.
Yeah, real young. And I remember somebody introduced me to Shout at the Devil from Motley Crue. And then I was like, ooh, you know, and it's like, I don't know why I liked the harder, the louder, and the darker it was, the more I liked it. I don't know why, but I was
because it's usually
drawn.
Good.
Yeah. Eventually, you know, I was influenced by a lot of stuff that was going on MTV, you know, because I didn't have a, you know, a lot of money that I could just throw around. But so I discovered a lot of bands on MTV. One of them would be Iron Maiden. You know, I would say that might have been a little bit of an early influence.
I always like to ask you who your first concert was. That, I mean, I know some people, it's kind of goofy first concerts, but your real first concert, I guess you could say, that you went to or chose to go to.
Oh, that I chose to go to. I remember as a little kid, I was taken to see Night Ranger.
Oh, man.
The first one that I ever wanted to go to, I believe, was Petra on the On Fire tour.
Okay.
And we used to have a place called the Hera Arena, which back then, a lot of rock and metal bands, as you can remember, like, you know, would easily pack those places all over the globe, you know. It's a little different now for most bands, unless you're Metallica or Iron Maiden or something.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Right. But yeah, I saw them there, and I remember John Schlitt had the big sword that's on that album cover. They had like a metal one on the stage that he would run up.
That's cool.
I saw them a couple of times. I was a big Stryper fan growing up too, and never got to see them until a few years back, actually.
Yeah, that was same with me. They broke up before I could ever see them. I was a diehard fan, and thankfully they reunited. But I was gonna ask you, because you mentioned about, you know, Stryper, Petra. Did you grow up in a Christian family where you were listening to Christian music also, or how was that?
Now, see, that's interesting. Family? That's interesting because, you know, my mother and my father split up when I was about 4 years old. So I don't really remember them together, you know. That kind of set off me going back and forth a lot. You know,
between
what I mean?
The two of them, you mean? Or
yes. Yeah. Like I would stay with my mom 1 year, or I'd spend the summer with my dad, or
yeah,
I'd spend a year with me and vice versa. It was kind of crazy. My upbringing was a little crazy in that kind of way, but, you know, I was raised to believe in God. I mean, you know, my mom and everybody on my mom's side of the family, they were all believers, but maybe, you know, my mom wasn't like going to church. She wasn't really practicing, so to speak. And she was also a lot more liberal as far as like, she pretty much allowed me to do not anything I wanted, but, you know, I could have, you know, a poster of a girl in a bikini and she didn't care, you know. I'm 11
years old. You were able to watch MTV. I couldn't even do that.
So. Exactly. Now when I would go to my dad's, my stepmother was, I think she was afraid that I was going to be a bad influence on my younger brother, you know. I kind of brought heavy metal into, you know, their life. And I think that scared her a lot back then. I mean, she's come a long way since. She's really, really cool now. But back then she was.
I think that's happened with a lot of, my mom was the same, you know, kind of the same thing. So, and it's funny, I think a lot of people have kind of loosened up over the years, just.
Yeah.
The way they thought, their mentality of that kind of stuff. But
they reluctantly allowed me to listen to Stryper in their home, but I wasn't allowed to have the posters because of they didn't like the way they looked.
Oh, yeah.
But a lot of people aren't even allowed to listen to them when they're growing up. So at least I got that much.
Yeah. Well, when did you kind of get into Christianity, and when did that become more serious? And did music have any kind of influence?
You know, honestly, and this is going to sound crazy, but I attempted very hilariously to record my first music when I was 10 years old.
And yeah.
Of course, it was terrible. But, you know, at that moment, I was just, I don't know, I was just singing about whatever, you know, I wasn't going for any lyrical direction or nothing. I was just a kid. I was just trying to make music. And about a year later, you know, I was actually with my stepmom. She was driving me home and she explained to me what salvation was and why it was important. And, actually when she dropped me off, there was nobody home. And I remember I just walked in and literally said the prayer right there. Mm. So after that, it wasn't long, you know, about maybe within a year, that I discovered the existence of Stryper. And I was like, oh wow, and started to realize that, hey, you can do the music you enjoy and still sing about your faith, and that inspired me a lot. I think I've never really been the same since then.
Yeah, I was gonna also ask, when did you start, I guess, performing, or did you form any kind of bands or start getting involved in music yourself?
Yeah, I was trying before I was ready, long before I was ready to do that.
Yeah.
Didn't really getting anything real serious going until maybe, geez, I don't know, the early 90s at most. And it was just garage stuff. We never played no shows. We would write a couple songs and the guitar player would quit and it would be like, oh, it's the end of the world, and start over again, try to do another band. I mean, you're trying to, first of all, back then it was before Facebook and before all that kind of stuff. You had to put up flyers and you're looking for a needle in a haystack. You're looking for somebody that wants to play metal and loves metal, but also,
Well, let me
has.
ask you real quick. Was that challenging? Are you saying that was challenging to find members or people like-minded in your area to do that?
Yes, it was. I mean, there were plenty of bands, there were artists out there, but to find somebody that was like, yeah, let's do this Christian thing, that was tough,
Yeah,
especially
that, I
if you
mean,
didn't
that
have
narrows it
connections.
down. Well, you were also, I know you mentioned in our interactions with messaging that you were really into bands like Deliverance. Jimmy Brown was a huge influence. Who
Yes.
were other bands that started to influence you when you started getting involved in music and singing? Do you play other instruments or play instruments at all, or
Yeah,
you
I
play
can play
guitar,
some
right?
guitar. I used to play a lot, but I was actually in a band back in like 94, and I actually played bass and sang. And one day I broke a string. I didn't have any extra strings with me.
At a show?
And what's that?
Was that at a show?
No.
Okay, I was gonna say,
Yeah.
that wouldn't be good.
This is before my real true show days.
Right.
We were living the dream in the garage, and they said, well, man, we just started practicing. Let's just play without the bass. And I said, okay. And I sat it down and I don't know, there's just something about it. I'm like, I like this. I like, having just the mic and focusing on the vocals. And after that, I pretty much made a decision. That's what I wanted to do. And I haven't looked back. But yeah, I can play some bass. I can play guitar. I mean, I could play Hell's Bells on drums, but I mean, I'm
Most,
no true
yeah,
drummer.
well, most monkeys probably could, honestly, with
That's
the simple,
right.
as simple as that stuff is. Now, but you were, like I said, you were influenced by Jimmy and others. So who were you really looking at as influence? I mean, it could be Christian or non-Christian.
Yeah, I was a big Sacred Warrior fan. They were probably the first non-striper band that was openly Christian that I discovered. And he has a bit of a higher range than me, but he was still, that style. I think it influenced me a lot. And once I discovered Deliverance, I quickly realized that we had a similar range, And some people think that, oh, okay, so he's trying to sound like Jimmy Brown. I never really tried to sound like Jimmy Brown. It just so happened that my voice was good for what he did, and I did practice along and sing some of his stuff, and I'm like, yeah, this is where I'm at, Yeah, he's a big influence. I would say probably Jimmy's probably the biggest influence, but I was a fan of Bride, Vengeance Rising, Believer. I kind of liked it all, and I got into this thing where I began to feel like, what direction do I want to go in? Do I want to do thrash and scream and growl, or do I want to sing, like Ray Parra and Jimmy Brown? And there was a conflict there for a while, and eventually I just said, I'm just going to do it all.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I think I read that interview you did a while back that you just said, I'll do both. I'll combine it all and do it all and not just narrow it down to one thing. And would you say that Biogenesis was your first real band, or was there anything any beforehand that was kind of pushing through or anything like that that was a little more serious?
Honestly, all the bands that I was doing before that and leading up to that were just bands that never got out. They never really got out of the garage, you know. We would get real serious and we would get 10 songs, 15 songs. I remember I actually was in a band called Millennium and completely unknown band. And this was in the early mid 90s. And it was like a Scorpions or like a 70s, 80s, like, you know, rock and roll, straightforward kind of a band. And I remember going to a local studio and I took my tax return. With no help from the other members. I mean, you know, I wanted to do it. I'm not saying that they refused. I just said, hey, I'm taking this tax return. We're going to the studio. And we recorded a full CD. And then it was like a short time later, the guitarist quit for like the third time.
Right.
You know, and I was just like, you know what? I got kind of fed up and I'm like, you know what? I need to just form my own band. I just need to start from the ground up, name it, build the platform, and then if people come and go, they come and go. You know, that way, you know, my band doesn't have to stop every time somebody decides they don't want to do it anymore. And so that's around that time I was trying to decide what direction to go in, because like I said, Millennium was like a hard rock thing. And that's when I really made the decision to do the hybrid metal thing. Like, so I can kind of, I wanted to make my own calling card, something that I would be known for that made me stand out.
How old were you when Biogenesis comes together and you do that?
Well, about 96, so I would say about 20, 21, something like that.
Is that what you were actively pursuing, that you wanted to do music, or was there anything else going on in your life?
Man, I really did, but I was teaching martial arts at that time real heavily. I would practice, I would have about two or three classes a week in martial arts, and then on the weekend, my band would come and have practice. You know,
how did that band come together? I mean, like we were talking about earlier, it's kind of hard to just find guys that do that stuff. So
I actually perform. The first thing I did was record a demo, a home demo where I was playing all the instruments. Well, I used a drum machine. I wasn't playing the drums.
Yeah.
But I played the bass and the guitar tracks and all that. I was just experimenting with how is this hybrid thing going to work? You know, how's it going to come across? And I started feeling good about it. And then I started making phone calls to guys I knew. And there was this drummer named Joe Jonker that was in the previous band, Millennium. And he was in a couple of my other garage bands. He was all about it. And so he became the drummer. And then he and I went back to that studio I was referring to earlier and forked over some more cash. And we made a real demo with me on guitar and bass and him on drums. And that was the real beginning of Bio. The three of those tracks were released in 2013. But yeah, they were recorded all the way back in like 97 or 98.
Was that just like somewhere local you recorded those at?
Yes, yeah. And then I knew this guy named James Riggs. I knew he was really the only guy that I knew that could play like that Slayer, Megadeth. You know, a lot of the guys I knew, they were more like rock and roll. They were more like Led Zeppelin and more Scorpions. And, you know, what I mean, I wanted somebody that could kind of do both, you know, like I needed that in order to pull off what my vision was. So James got into it, but that wasn't easy. He kept pulling for us to go heavier and heavier. He wanted to go more traditional thrash. And I'm like, no, I'm trying to do this hybrid dream, man. So it took a while, but eventually it worked out and we were able to make that first album.
How many songs were on that demo?
Geez, I want to say around, I could be wrong, maybe 12.
It's a lot of songs like for
yeah, it know, was. A demo. It was kind of a long debut.
where does that kind of lead you to? Because eventually you do hook up with Steve Rowe, but what happens in the meantime between that?
So we finally, once we got some songs together, broke out of the garage, so to speak. We started playing in some local clubs, and there was one in particular in Dayton, Ohio called Twisters. They kind of had their own built-in crowd. It's like no matter who was playing, that place was full of people. And we got the opportunity to play there completely unknown. No one's ever heard of us. And we opened for a really popular local band called Dr. X. And the crowd went nuts when we played. They were just like, who are these guys? You know, where did you guys come from? And so we're like, oh, you know, this is good. People's like, you know, people are liking this. This is great. You know, and you're starting, because you just don't know until you're out there. You don't know what's going to happen. And actually, we started making another demo. We got our bass player, Randy Walton. He answered an ad, one of those ads that I was talking about, old school. And next thing I know, I hear that there's a band called Gnashing of Teeth. I don't know if you remember them. They had like one album on Roe once, and they were from the same area, from Dayton, Ohio. And they signed with Roe Productions, and I guess they're at this bookstore tonight, you know, doing like a CD release thing or whatever. And I, you know, my bass player was like, well, let's go talk to them and ask them, how do we reach out to their label? So he and I went there, and to make a long story short, one of the guys was like, well, the American rep, she's standing right over there.
Okay, that's
So I
convenient.
approached her. Her name was Kathy Zappa, and I approached her. At first, she had this look on her face, like, "Oh, not again! Not another guy wanting me to sign him," you know. But I started to describe the music, and she's like, "Whoa! Well, now I want to hear this." So we got her a demo, and within a few days, she called me and she said, "Like, we want to sign you. Like, Steve loves it, and we want to sign you." So that's how it all began.
How soon after were you guys like a band that this actually happens? Is it
Pretty quick.
pretty quick? Yeah, it
Yeah.
sounds like it is pretty quick.
Pretty quick. We had barely started playing out when this happened. And
So
of
what
course, I was
happened?
familiar with Steve Rowe. I watched Steve Rowe from the beginning of Mortification. So it was kind of a big deal for me, you know.
When's the first time you talked to Steve, and what's that conversation like?
Shortly after that, I remember requesting to talk to him, actually, because I was a diehard fan. I was kind of a fanboy, you know, and like, well, I'm on his label, so why can't I talk to him on the phone, you know?
Of course.
And so I was able to talk to him on the phone. He's a great guy, man. Just very genuine. Like, what you see is what you get, you know. That's the best way to describe him.
Well, I definitely want to ask about this because there's a couple things that I don't know if you would say were controversial, but a little, maybe some hiccups in the road for you, maybe just you, but when that album, for that album, I guess, there's a couple things about it. Did you have to re-record this album, or
Oh yeah.
was it, did Steve say, hey, you need to, was that him that said you need to re-record? Was this your demo that he was talking about that you were mentioning earlier, or was it something else, or
So
what was going
they
on?
loved the demo, okay, that we had presented to them. And so they told us, go ahead and just keep doing what you're doing, but do a full length. So we went back in and record with the same guy. And honestly, when I put the old demo against the finished product with that same producer, it is different. So I can see like the tones were different. Anyways, we spent a couple of months or so in the studio doing a full length. We were happy about it. We knew that, you know, it wasn't like Operation Mindcrime production, but you know, we thought for a debut, you know, this shouldn't be it should be all right. We turn it in thinking, here we go, you know, and waiting to find out when it's going to get released and all this kind of stuff. And I get a phone call from Kathy Zappen, the American rep, and she says, yeah, the production's not up to standard. And that's actually the CD that came out in 2013 called The Mark Bleeds Through First Blood. So when you see that, Soundmass decided to release that because it had never been released to the public before. But yeah, we were kind of shocked. We were a little bit stunned. At the time, I didn't really get it, but you know, looking back and listening to it, there's spots where I'm like, okay, I kind of get it, you know. But then we had to go back into the studio with a producer of their choosing.
Do you go to the same studio, or do you go to a different
No.
studio that they want, or?
Completely different studio, completely different guy, somebody that they trusted, based on something he had done for them before, I believe, or something like that. And we had basically, this is how many hours you have. This is your budget. And it wasn't a large budget by any means.
I mean, basically, what they gave you 3 days basically to record this thing, or was
that's
it...
pretty much, I mean, to, in order to get it all done, like we were talking about earlier, it's a long album, you know? So one day was dedicated to the drums. One day was dedicated to the guitar and bass. And I had one day to do all the vocals. And I remember being pretty, pretty raw at the end of that day.
Well, I read something, and I don't know if it, you know, if it's true or if there's, you know, what the situation was, but that the guitarist that he tuned down, and you didn't know he was going to do that, and you came in to record your vocals.
And so do you remember? You remember earlier I kind of alluded to how the guitarist James Riggs, he's a big thrash guy, and he was kind of always pulling, trying to get us to be a little heavier and stuff like that. So he goes in the studio, and we're actually away from home, so we have hotels, and I'm like, well, he's done this before. I can just chill out at the hotel. I don't need to be there all day while he's tracking his guitars. So he goes, and he tells the producer, hey, I want to sound heavier. He pulls out a Cannibal Corpse CD. He says, I want a tone like this. Okay? Just being... just brutally honest and not trying to throw him under the bus in any way, just fact giving here. James was not that knowledgeable about clean vocals. He wasn't really a big fan of it. It wasn't something that he thought about, you know.
He didn't know how this was going to impact you.
I don't even think it crossed his mind, you know. He was just thinking about he wanted to sound this heavy, you know, or this dark and that sort of thing. And so he literally sat there and found the tuning that Cannibal Corpse was in and played the entire record in that tuning. And I had no idea.
You think the producer would at least had a thought about this could impact the vocals?
You would think. I don't know. I wasn't privy. I wasn't there during that conversation, but I wish I was. I wish I had been. And so I came in for my day, and I was excited. I was like, yeah, let's get this done. And I remember we had a song called Legal Murder, and that was the first one I wanted to record. And the opening line is like, legal murder, you know? And so I'm doing that. And the guy goes, he stops. He's like, hey man, you're kind of like off key or something. It's like, something's weird. And I'm like, not off key. Like, I've sang this 100,000 times. Like, you're crazy, man. So he hits it again, and I do it again, and he stops it. He's like, man, I don't know what you're doing, but it's not working, yada, yada. So that's when I discovered that this is a different tuning. So I ended up being like, legal murder, you know. And I realized I was forced to do anything clean. I had to stay around that range to make it work. I was not happy. But
yeah, fans, and you were so limited on time.
Debut album. Yeah, that was our debut album, so a lot of fans had no idea. They just thought that's what I was, right. You know?
I mean, I'm sure that was stressful, and a lot of, you know, you get it, you're like, golly, I can't, there's not much you could do. You were so crunched on time that had to be, stressful for you.
It was very stressful. I mean, we were excited. We wanted to get it out. It's our debut album, you know? We all kind of dreamt about this for years, and it was a big deal for us. And
I think it was that album I was listening to, and maybe it was because of that, and you're singing deeper, that at times you had a little bit of a savior machine sound in my mind.
I thought you might bring that up, and there's a funny little story behind that too.
Okay.
If you open up the CD, on the inside cover, there's a picture of the band playing in a very small bar. And I just happened to wear a Savior Machine 1 shirt that night.
Okay.
We had paid like $100 to do this really nice photo shoot. And we had like a bunch of photographs. And we all chose this one photograph of all of us standing there. And we wanted that. But the label said, hey, I like this little picture in this bar. And they decided to put that in there instead. Mm. And I liked Savior Machine for sure. And I was listening to them. But like, I can't even really call them an influence, because by the time I discovered them, I was already singing the way I did, you know? And some people think, oh, you must be into David Bowie and all that, because, you know, I have a similar range to Jimmy, you know, but I never listened to, I never listened to David Bowie, you know?
Okay.
But yeah, because of that, the circumstances behind the tuning and the shirt, everybody's like, oh, we get it. Okay, he's trying to be Eric Clayton.
Yeah. Well, when that comes out, what's the next step? Do you guys go on tour with Mortification, or is there things going on? Or
yeah, so Mortification was on that world tour where they did that Mortification Conquers the World DVD. And they were coming through the States. And so they decided to take us, which I'm so glad they did. It was a great experience. It was awesome. Some shows, as you saw on the DVD, if for those of you have seen it, some shows were, 10 people in some small place somewhere. And then another night, the place would be packed. It was pretty wild, but it was a pretty awesome experience. And actually, it kind of helped launch us a little bit in the beginning, as far as further out.
Is there any stories playing those shows that stand out, or any, even if you have a awkward or bad story or fun story, or just anything that sticks out playing with Steve and Mortification?
Oh man, those guys, first of all, they were hilarious. We were laughing the whole time. There was one point where our bass player decided to skip, drive through the night because we were riding in like a van. We're all like packed in this little van. And he decides, I'll just get us to the next place instead of staying in the hotel after the show, the previous show. Mm-hmm. He says, I'll just go to the next place. Well, our room wasn't available until 3 o'clock in the afternoon. So Steve Rowe's like, nah, man, I need my rest, and he has his complications and everything. And Randy's like, oh, don't, just relax. Just go ahead and just lay back and sleep. And I'll drive through the night. I'll stay up all night. This will be better. And so he ended up getting his way and we couldn't get in the room. So I remember we're sitting there in a restaurant trying to figure out what to do. And my bass player's name was Randy, and Steve Rowe looks at me and goes, Randy, I'm going to kick your ass.
He's like, this is a bad idea.
There was another time where the drummer was imitating Beavis and Butthead or something, and he was walking with his cane and he was stepping up trying to, go into a gas station, and he sort of stumbled. I had to catch him because he was started laughing.
Who was in Mortification with Steve at that time? Do you remember?
They had a real young kid.
Was that the drummer? Was that the drummer guy, the kid?
Yeah, the drummer. It was the Silver Cord is Severed tour. That was their latest album. So it was that lineup. And what's the guitarist from that he had? Lincoln Bowen. Lincoln Bowen was his guitar player. And then that young kid, and he's going to kill me if he hears this interview. He's like, I can't remember you. I can't believe you don't remember my name.
I know Mortification went through quite a bit of lineup changes too, which mm-hmm. you are familiar with. We'll talk about it in a little bit, but.
Oh, yeah.
Do you only do the one album with Rowe Productions?
Yes.
Was that the original idea or contract or whatever you guys might have done, was supposed to be more to be done, or what happens?
We signed a 3-album deal with them, and I kind of hesitated for a minute because, to be honest, I really wanted a Metal Blade or something like that, and that's nothing against Rowe Productions or anything like that. I kind of wanted to just be in the mainstream market. That's what I would have preferred, kind of like Jacob's Dream did, which I'm sure we'll discuss later, But I was thinking, we're in Dayton, Ohio, it's so hard to get out of here and get noticed abroad and get signed. It was really hard in those days. And so we're like, we better take this chance and just see where it takes us. So we signed a 3-album deal. And after we finished the Mark Bleeds Through, we did the tour and all that. I came across Jimmy Brown and we started talking. Jimmy heard the music. He loved it. And of course, I was a diehard Deliverance fan growing up, so this is a big deal. I really want to do this and hang out with him and stuff. So we ended up playing with Deliverance in Texas, and this was when Deliverance was just coming back and doing that Assimilation album. They had been away for a while, and after that, man, me and Jimmy just struck a friendship. You know, I'll never forget him just standing right in front of me, and I was all nervous singing on stage. So, like, you know, one of your icons is like staring at you, you know, it's like, come on. So then he wanted to take us under his wing, you know, and he wanted to try to help us. He thought we were really good, and he thought, you know, I want to try to help you guys get out there a little more, you know. And so we told Kathy Zappin from Row Productions, hey, you know, we'd like to work with Jimmy. Make a long story short, she was pretty strict about trying to keep us there. And we pretty much ended up, Jimmy had to contact her and say, hey, you know, you're in breach of contract in a couple different areas. And then she let us go at that point. So, you know, okay. I got nothing but good things to say about Row Productions. I love Steve. Love him to death. And honestly, we wouldn't be sitting here talking if Steve didn't sign me. So, you know, I got nothing but love for them. But that's kind of what happened. We started working with Jimmy. And Jimmy ended up moving to, he lived in St. Louis, Missouri at the time, which was about a 6-hour drive for us. Okay. We went down, recorded one song called Fallback. So if you find that song anywhere, that Jimmy produced it and Jimmy played bass on it. He was supposed to record the rest of our album, and he was going to do a record label and then sign us to that label. But it all kind of fell apart after he moved to Las Vegas. And actually, what most people don't know is Jimmy tried to talk me into moving to Vegas. He's like, if you come out here, like, I can blow you guys up around here, you know. And there was a chance that Manny Morales and his drummer might be a part of Bio if I did it. So I really considered it for a minute, but it ended up not happening. And because of that, just became more and more difficult to figure out a way to record another album. And it just kind of went downhill from there.
Yeah. Cause you guys do kind of break up. Is that,
yeah.
Are you still in Biogenesis, or is that still a thing when Jacob's Dream comes along?
Yeah, see, that's kind of a misunderstanding with a lot of people, because my first album with Jacob's Dream doesn't come out till 2005, and Biogenesis actually breaks up in 2005. Mm-hmm. But when I joined Jacob's Dream, Bio was technically still active, and I remember when they offered me the position in Jacob's Dream, I said to them, I said, if you guys are cool with me being in two bands and working, making that work, then I would love to do it. So that's, you know, but then 2005 came and Bio ended up breaking up for its own reasoning, not related to Jacob's Dream. So it just kind of looks that way.
How familiar were you even friends with those guys in Jacob's Dream up to that point?
Yeah, when they were just releasing the Theater of War album, their second album, I remember hearing them because they knew Kathy Zappin as well, the lady that was running. Yeah,
from Row.
Yes. And so we kind of had that connection, and she's like, well, you guys need to play shows together. And I was a, you know, big fan of Vinnie Domine and Sacred Warrior, like we talked about. I love that style. And it was kind of amazing at that time to see a modern band around this area playing that kind of music. I was like, man, this is really awesome, you know? And we started playing shows together. Started playing shows back and forth. We'd go to Columbus. It's about an hour drive from Dayton. We'd go up there, or actually up here. I live here now in Columbus. And we would open for them in their hometown, and then they'd drive down to our town and they'd open for us. And by then we kind of had a local base going on, you know, fan base. And, you know, we were just having a blast. And then the next thing I know, David Taylor, the original vocalist of Jacob's Dream, he steps down. And I remember thinking, man, who are they going to get to replace that guy? Like, around here, like, who's going to fill that guy's shoes? You know, I don't know anybody that sings that way in that range. Dave was the only one I knew at the time in the area. There's not very many. So I don't know, a couple of years, I want to say, a year or two goes by. And I remember every now and then I'd reach out to him. Hey, you know, how's the vocalist search going? You know, you guys find anybody? And one day I get an email like, hey, man, well, you know, would you like to try out? And I was like, man, that'd be awesome. That'd be so much fun. You know, I love that style of music, you know. And drove up here in Columbus and tried out and didn't really hear much. And a little bit of time goes by, they call me back. Hey, we want you to come back one more time. So I come back one more time. Well, they had all this new stuff. I was listening to the first two albums and like, okay, how can I fit my range into what he's doing and make it sound good? So I'm all prepared for that. I get in there. Instead of jamming with them, which I expected to be doing, I thought, yeah, let's play Theater of War or let's play Funambulism or Kinescope. They're like, no, we have all this new stuff. And, you know, they handed me a sheet of paper of something I never heard in my life. Now sing this. And it's recorded in my headphones. And they're all just sitting around staring at me.
Would they have like guide vocals for you or something?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. They had like John Barry had like a quick over, like, this is kind of how we want it, but like do it, you know, really good, you know?
Yeah.
And it was kind of nerve wracking, to be honest. You know, I was already nervous, but then I was like, geez, I never even like, but I guess they wanted to hear, they're like, okay, we're not likely to find another David Taylor. So let's see what this guy's like with our new stuff. I think that's kind of what it was about at the time. It ended up working out.
Was that something you were pretty happy about happening? Did you feel like it was a step up from where you were at? Because they were somewhat established and they're also absolutely on Metal Blade.
Yeah, absolutely, man. I'm not going to pull no punches about that. I mean, I'm going to be brutally honest. You know, the fact that they were on Metal Blade and they played a type of music that I loved and I was already a fan, I was like, heck yeah, this ought to be fine, you know? And it did. It did put me out there more than what Bio had. I mean, I only had one album with Biogenesis at that point. It was just sort of getting out there just a little bit, especially in the Christian market. And Jacob's Dream definitely, immediately upon the release of Drama of the Ages, it was like all kinds of people across Europe know my name and know what I sound like. It was pretty wild.
And that, so Drama of the Ages was your first, that was their third album technically, correct?
Correct. Yes.
With in third with Metal Blade and also their final album with Metal Blade. But what was it like with that experience of going in with, well, from what I've heard, didn't they have their own studio at this point when you go in?
Yes.
And I even said this, John, I know I read some folks that kind of complain about the production on that maybe being too muddy or what it might have been. And I know he was also saying that they were kind of still getting the feel for having their own studio and setting, getting those things set. But what was it like from your experience from Biogenesis and that studio experience coming into this?
Man, it was totally different. I liked the fact that I could take my time. I didn't have to be like, oh, how much are we paying by the hour? Oh man, what time is it? You know?
Right.
That just adds a lot of stress, you know, especially when you're broke, you know.
Don't tune down.
Yeah. So that part of it was really nice. The only thing that I worried about, and this is no knock on the guys, I totally get what they were going for. And I'm behind all that part of it. And they knew more about it than I did. So I'm not like, oh, look at me, you know, no, so don't get me wrong. But, you know, production wise, I felt like, well, okay, that's great. Let's record it. But can we get a professional to come in and mix it? Mm-hmm. And at that time, they were hell bent on doing it themselves.
Mixed it themselves. Okay.
And so we did the Dominion of Darkness album. And I was excited about the songs when we were writing. And I was like, man, this is going to be killer, you know. But then once the production phase started, it sounded more like a demo to me, you know, and to be honest, and I'm just being brutally honest, you know, I'm just going to open up and be totally honest with you here, you know,
that's what I want.
and again, it's no knock on the guys. I think most of them, if not all of them, would probably agree with me about that now. But at the time I was kind of the lone voice going, guys, I don't know, you know, you guys are established now with three albums on a major label. Do you really want to take this risk of putting something out there that's not quite up to, you know, standard or whatever? And, well, you know, they released it independently. I was also against that. I was the lone person that voted against that. John and I were talking about that the other day. He was actually over here at my place and, you know, I think he agrees with me now, but at the time it was there five of us in the band. It was four against one.
Yeah.
So I was completely outvoted.
And you, I mean, you were kind of like the new guy too. So
exactly. That's right.
Kind of hard to feel like you have such a say when you're the new guy.
Right. Yeah.
Coming in like that. But, how many albums did you do total with them? Like three?
Yes, I did three albums with them. Yep.
How long were you actually in that band?
About 10 years.
And, any shows that also stand out from that time, any acts you got to play with or even going over to Europe in that experience, you know, tell me about that.
Oh, it was wonderful, man. I got to play in Germany. I didn't get to do Wacken and all that like they did, you know, before I was in the band, but I got to play in Germany. I got to play in Mexico, Puerto Rico a couple of times. In fact, I met my now ex-wife at a show in Puerto Rico. She was actually on the stage doing sign language to the song Spinning Leaf.
That had to be interesting to see someone doing sign language first of all.
Oh, it sure was. And that just happened to be the one song that I wrote the entire song, the music and everything. And they liked it and said, hey, can we use this? I'm like, sure. And she just happened to pick that one. And I guess they were playing it on the radio in Puerto Rico at the time. That's cool. And so she had learned the song in sign language. And yeah, and she was a big fan. And I it wasn't like, oh, I'm going to date this girl. it wasn't like that at all. One day about a month later, I kind of ran into her on MySpace. You know, that's how long ago it was. And we just started chatting and it went from there. But yeah, so that's a thing. Mexico was awesome. I mean, man, they had us on a bus with like Dale Thompson from Bride and the Petra guys played too. I got to meet John Schlitt backstage. He was a super nice guy.
Yeah, he is.
It was just a great. I mean, there were bands from all over. There was that Shadows of Paragon, the black metal band from Sweden with a female guitar player. I'm real good friends with her too.
Are they a Christian band or just a?
Yeah.
Okay.
They are. Yeah.
It's always weird to hear Christian black metal. Yeah. Like, yeah. What? Is that contradicting or not?
Right. Yeah. Yeah, I get it. I mean, as an artist.
What's the name of that band again? I'm sorry. Say it.
Shadows of Paragon.
Okay. I have to check that out.
Yeah. They've been around a long time, but she's also in a band, I believe, is called Soundless Whisper. I want to get this right because she'll kill me if I don't.
What's her name?
Charlie, but it's with a Z. I don't know how to say her last, Gus Davison or something.
God bless you.
I'll have to apologize to her. Yeah. If she hears this. Oh, you
I have to check. I have to check that out. Yeah, I'm not familiar. I'm always looking for new stuff to listen to, so have to check that out. And people out there can check them out too. But and always, I mentioned this with John and other people that play Europe, and especially metal, just the difference. You know what you thought the difference of playing Europe as opposed to America. How you felt, because I hear a lot of good things about how European fans are and the difference, but what was your perspective on that?
Well, you know, have you ever like gotten used to a steak in your town, your hometown, and it's pretty good, you know? And then you go to another country and you have the steak and you're like, what is this? I mean, it's, you know, nothing against my own people in my own country and town, but something that really stood out to me in Germany, for example, when Jacob's Dream was playing, it started pouring rain and we were outside and there was a roof over us, but it was just pouring on the crowd.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking, you gotta be kidding me. Everybody's gonna scatter, you know, cause they had, you know, tents and trailers they could scatter to. I was just like, wow. You know, I think almost for sure that like at least half those people probably would have scattered if it was here.
So, yeah, you're probably right.
Another thing that stood out to me is we had just come out with that Dominion album. And after we played, we were standing there selling, you know, merch and everything. This girl, she's in line and she gets up there and she's like, man, I knew it. I knew it. And she's like, I knew you guys were going to have the Dominion album. And she's like, I've had such a hard time getting it. Mm. And the bass player of Jacob's Dream, he goes, well, here you go. Don't worry about it. She's like, oh no. She was like offended. She's like, I pay for my music. And she walks away. She would not take it from him. She walks away, comes back like 30 minutes later. Oh, I borrowed the money. I'm just like, wow. So yeah, just everything about it was different to me. Like, it's like, they don't care about there's no time stamp on anything. They either like it or they don't. Mm-hmm. And if they like it, man, you know it. You know what I mean? There's so much, there's a level of appreciation that's just raw and real. You know, it's pretty amazing.
What was your favorite album of the three that you got to record on with them? Was there one that stands out for you?
Man, I would say musically by far it would be Drama of the Ages. Mm-hmm. But lyrically and like, I don't know, man, there's a Beneath the Shadows, my last album with the band, was really powerful. It was a concept album, really intense. And
What was the concept?
It was basically a fictional character who became a drug addict. He kind of lost everything. You know, he had the big house, the white picket fence dream life. Mm-hmm. And he got back into the drugs and selling it and all this mm-hmm. other stuff. It's kind of a story that kind of shows you how drugs can destroy you from the inside out, you know? Mm-hmm. However, by the end of the story, he kind of comes back to the faith. He finds God again. He had faith in the past, but he kind of got away, okay. You know? So there's that element in there too. So it's pretty powerful. It's very emotional.
I did want to ask you about with Drama of the Ages, that being your first album, the last album with Metal Blade disappointing for you? Like, man, I'm coming to this band and we're on a really cool label and now we're not.
Man, it really was. They were really hell bent on having full control. And I think they felt like, hey, we're established enough that we should be able to pull this off. And, you know, I think they wanted to get cut out the middleman, so to speak, you know, because when you're on a label, they get most of the money and then they use some of that money to promote you. Mm-hmm. But that's the give and take, you know. They really wanted to cut all that out and be in full control and have full control of the money and all of that. But what they didn't take into account is it's a lot of work, man. You know, you got five guys in the band, none of which are, you know, good at that kind of marketing thing. You know, we're musicians. We're not PR guys or whatever you call it. And it kind of fell flat. Dominion of Darkness, the next one, I mean, kind of fell flat on its face pretty fast compared to when we're on Metal Blade. When we're on Metal Blade, we were getting phone calls left and right from Belgium and from all over Europe wanting interviews. We were in Mexico. Magazines were requesting interviews for me to come out of my room, you know, and it was wild. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, so we're just going independent. We're just going back to like we're starting over or something, you know, because I knew how hard it was and how lucky we were. It's not easy to get on a label like that. It's really hard, you know? So I was disappointed. You know, at the time they felt like it was the best thing to go with, but I did not agree with it at any point, honestly.
And towards your end of the time when you're with the band, when did the thought or maybe Biogenesis that start happening again for that to come back? Were you still with Jacob's Dream or was that over and then that happens?
Yeah, so actually I was still very firmly entrenched with Jacob's Dream. And you remember how when we were talking about Bio earlier and we had broken up, how hard it was for us to find a way to record. Mm-hmm. You know, now we all have like these studios and, I can even record my own vocals. But back then it was like, man, how are we going to do this? How are we going to afford this? And we had, you know, it was just such a hard, we had such a difficult time pulling that off. But anyways, I was getting, you know, emails from fans. Oh, I really miss Biogenesis. That was such a great album. You know, I like what you're doing and your other band, but man, what might have been and all that kind of stuff, you know? So there was some of that. And then I had my old members, man, we should bring it back. And so there was a record label that offered to do a new record. And I was like, well, let me talk to the Jacob's Dream guys. And the drummer of Jacob's Dream, who did most of the production, he's like, well, you guys can record here for this amount. So I'm like, you know what? All right, let's just do it. Let's just see what happens. So we did a new Bio album, and it was produced in the same Jacob's Dream studio. Mm-hmm. You know, that one kind of suffered from the same production issues as the day.
Okay.
But I mean, I didn't really at the time, you know, have another avenue at that moment in time.
Which album was that for Biogenesis?
That was The Rise, The Fall, The Rebirth. It came out in 2012.
And which did that go on the label you were talking about, or was that?
That's a new label. It's called Sound Mass.
Okay.
It was so-so. I mean, in no way do I want to compare us to Stryper in any way, but it kind of reminds me of like when Stryper came out with Reborn. It was kind of like some people were like, okay. Mm. You know, it wasn't quite the
comeback album. I was one of those. Or yeah.
It was like that for us on a smaller scale, of course, but it was kind of like that. The production was weird for us and stuff like that.
It was at the, I mean, like Stryper is like, this ain't the sound that I'm used to hearing with Stryper.
Yeah, right.
When does Jacob Street, when does that come to an end for you? What's going on with you? What causes you to, or I mean, if you want to say or whatever it is, but what leads you out of the band?
Yeah, so we started working on the next album, which ended up being called Sea of Destiny. And I actually worked on that album for about 2 years with the guys. And I had recorded a lot of, maybe not finished vocals, but I did a lot of demo vocals, kind of writing process sort of stuff. And I don't know, there was just like some things that were said, like in, you know, with the guys and stuff, where I sort of started feeling like they wanted to go in a different direction. I think they were missing Dave Taylor, which to a point I understand that,
yeah.
You know,
he came back after you left. Is that correct?
Eventually he did,
but
I think my understanding is they kind of had to like, really like, come on, man, you know, you know, where I was like all invested, you know? So I totally understand, like, you know, when Rob Halford came back to Judas Priest or whatever, I get that, you know, I get it. And if Dave, honestly, if Dave would have said, man, you know, I love you, man, but man, I really miss it and I'd love to come back, I would have stepped down for him, you know, out of respect, I would have been okay to do that. But it wasn't like that. It was kind of like, well, we really want Dave back. And then they all, you know, they had to beg him, you know. So that was a little weird.
Did someone ask you to leave, or did you eventually leave on your own, or was it something else?
Yeah, I think I started feeling the tension in the room. I just think it was just saying, you know what I mean? Something's a little off.
Yeah.
And actually, to be honest, I was thinking in the back of my mind, like, this might be my last Jacob's Dream album, but I did want to finish it. I did want to do like one more and go out with a bang if I was going to leave. Mm-hmm. However, one day I came to sat down for our weekly, you know, practices or whatnot. And they just told me, hey, we're going to go in another direction. And that was that. So
was that disappointing for you, or did you kind of expect it to?
It was disappointing, but it was also in a way a bit of a relief. There was a lot of, I mean, there's no reason to go into a bunch of details, but there was just a lot of, I don't know, business stuff, like the way things were done, the way things were handled. One of them, which we already talked about, the label thing, because they had opportunity to go on to another German label, another strong label, because they had momentum going, or we did, you know, whatever you want to say. And I felt like, man, we need to keep that going. And so stuff like that, I was frustrated a lot. You know, I was frustrated with, no, we're not going to bring in a guy to mix. We like it the way it is. And then having to go read the reviews that are knocking the production, you know, stuff like that. So I was part of me, honestly, was a little bit relieved. But at the same time, it was sad because it was an important time in my life. And, you know, they did help me reach another level, like you alluded to earlier. And, you know, those are just facts. You can't take that away. But yeah, the band just lost its momentum after they left Metal Blade and then didn't want to go to another label. And so by then I was just like, okay, I mean, if that's what you guys want to do, you know, I had mixed feelings about it, honestly.
Would that probably have been tougher on you had the Biogenesis thing not been going on or started back up, you think?
Yeah. Oh yeah, for sure. And I think that was a little bit of it. It may not have been the reason.
Right.
But I think a couple of the guys, they didn't really like that I was doing these other projects. I remember one of them saying, you know, I watched some videos of you with Biogenesis and like you just look like you're having so much fun, and you know, you don't seem like you're having that kind of fun with us. And it's like, well, I mean, in bio, I can fully be myself and just express myself openly. I'm writing all the lyrics. I have no restrictions on how what I want to do vocally, you know, all of that, you know. So that's why you sense that, because I'm just being 100,000% free, you know. But I think it bothered them a little bit.
Okay.
But the problem that honestly, during that time, and they would admit this too, they would be playing maybe four or five shows a year, Jacob's Dream, you know.
It's not good.
And
It's not good.
I was the youngest guy in the band. I'm like, man, I want to play out, you know. Like I'm not getting younger. I want to play out. I want to do things. And if they and I told John Barry the other day, I was like, if you guys would have been touring and stayed busy, and we'd have stayed either with Metal Blade or somebody else, I wouldn't have had time for all these other things, which is the truth. Because
Right.
Jacob's Dream was my number one priority during that time.
And then I wanted to ask you, since Biogenesis came back, how many albums have you guys done total?
Now, when we first came back and we did that album in 2012, I wasn't sure, like, maybe this will just be a reunion album and that's it. You know, we played some shows, and then the Jacob's Dream thing that we just discussed happened. Next thing I know, I'm not in Jacob's Dream anymore. All of a sudden, I have more time on my hands. So the bio guys were like, well, now that you're not in Jacob's Dream, let's take this a little more seriously. That lineup eventually ended up breaking up. We played some shows in Puerto Rico, which was really cool. It started to get a little bit of momentum, and then we broke up. And around that time, I ended up in this new band called Letters to the Blind, and I did that for a while.
Well, tell me about Letters to the Blind. I didn't want to discuss that since you brought it up, but talk about it now if you don't mind. But tell me
Sure.
about that band and what kind of how would you describe that musically?
It's a different animal. I mean, I would say like a Killswitch Engage, Shadows Fall, Scar Symmetry, if you've ever heard of them, is kind of in that modern-esque vein, I guess, whatever, but it has like a lot of melody and heaviness. And, you know, obviously I'm already known for being a vocalist that can cross over. The guitarist, Blaine Gordon, he called me one day and just asked me, hey, would you want to sing on a couple songs for me? And I'm like, sure. And I think this was around 2011. Yeah, it was 2011. He sends me the first one, and he by the way is an excellent producer. You know,
Okay.
and I get the music and I'm like, wow. I mean, the music sounded like I thought I just turned on the radio station, you know. I was like, geez. And it
Much
wasn't
better
even
than a
mastered.
demo.
Yeah, and I was immediately inspired to write lyrics for it. So I wrote lyrics and everything, and recorded some vocals, sent it back to him. He was in Florida at the time, and I was here in Ohio. He loved it. I loved it. We did one more song, and he actually used to live down here. In fact, Blaine Gordon was in Biogenesis for about a year back in the day, like 2004 or something like that.
Okay.
So he's like, man, you know what? Let's just do this. Let's do Letters to the Blind as a real band. He's like, I'm moving back. So we got a bass player and a drummer, and voila, just like that, it was on. And man, it was awesome for a long time. We started before we knew it, we were opening up for All That Remains and Soulfly and man, just a bunch of them.
Yeah, some good
Havoc, I don't know
guys.
if you heard of that thrash band
I
Havoc,
have,
played
yep.
with them. There's a band, I think they were on Metal Blade, called Goat Whore. We played with them. Mushroom Head opened for them. And the
Yeah.
thing is like every time we would play these shows, like the bigger guys, you know, the bigger bands, like members of the bands were approaching us and going, man, where are you guys from? Like, I mean, you guys are really good, you know, and that kind of thing. And we're thinking, man, can we just take this somewhere? And I felt like there was a chance. I thought this might be my last chance to break into a new level. And one thing led to another, and you know, there was just a bunch of stuff that happened. And the whole Dayton, Ohio scene that we were growing in started kind of dissipating for various reasons. And Blaine, my guitar player, it was really his dream to be out there touring, and that's what he really wanted. he ends up getting an opportunity to join a band called War Curse, but they didn't need a guitarist. They needed a vocalist.
Okay.
So he tried out for them and he got the gig and they're on Metal Blade. Now he tours all the time. He's always out in Mexico or somewhere in Europe.
So he's with that band currently?
Yeah, he's living his dream. He's living his dream and I'm happy for him. I wish it could have been with Letters to the Blind, but now we did have a label sniffing at our heels at one point. And just, you know, I don't know what happened. It just never came to fruition. It was just like, man, if we could just be heard by the right people at the right time. You know what I mean? Because is a very like high level band, very top level pro style, you know, band.
And people can check that stuff out on your recordings on Bandcamp.
Right? That's correct. Yep.
And it's called Letters to the Blind for people that want to go check that out. When did that come to an end? About what time was that?
So about 2017, we finished up our second EP called Bow to the Machine. And that's around when everything started to fizzle out, like I was talking about. And around that time, like somebody actually kind of, you know, a bio fan, he was coming to the Letters shows. And one day he's like, I love Letters, man, but man, do I miss bio. And this, and this guy is not exactly a churchgoer either, you know, and he knows, he knew what bio was about and everything, but he's like, there's just something different about that band, man. And like, I really miss it. And he kind of put that thought in my head and he asked me, he's like, what would it take for you to bring bio back? And at that point, I really had put it behind me, you know? Mm-hmm. And to be honest with you, you know, Letters to the Blind, not a Christian band, not an anti-Christian band in any way, but in a way I think I needed a break away from always being expected to, you know, does that make sense? It's like,
yeah.
When you got that Christian scope on you, you know, it's like we're human beings and we're not perfect. We go through challenges in life.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean. I know there was a time in my life where I was playing on the worship team and there's things going on in my life. I'm like, I don't feel like I should be up here on stage representing.
Right.
Like I got too much stuff going on in my life. I that's really not great. And I need to stick. Yeah, I know what you mean. Kind of get away from it and figure those things out. But you know, I mean, just because you're Christian doesn't mean you have to sing about faith and Christianity all the time. There's things
in life. That, but during that time, and our lyrics are very meaningful, and you know, and we've got some uplifting songs. I'm talking about Letters to the Blind. I'm still trying to reach out to people in a positive way, even if it's not like directly through salvation and all that.
You mentioned that guy said, what would it take to get you back? I don't know if you, did you answer his question or was there an answer to that for bio when he said that to you?
Yeah, there was. There was actually a band called Right Way to Nowhere that was playing around. And there was a brother and sister combo in the band and the sister was the drummer and she was phenomenal. And both of them were actually very phenomenal. And they really stood out to me because they were young. It was kind of unusual, you know, to see the brother and sister thing, you know. And I had bumped into them. We'd played with them a couple of times. And I thought they were just really nice people. So I just said, well, if that chick would play drums, I would think about it, you know.
Okay.
And I didn't really think that she would.
I remember doing that research. I forgot you had her in the band there.
Yeah, I shouldn't just, sorry to call it just that chick. Her name was Magenica. I didn't mean that in a disparaging way or anything like that. But during that time, to be honest with you, I was kind of going through a little bit of bitterness, you know.
Like I wasn't towards mad. Anything certain?
I wasn't like Christianity mad at God. Or? No, I wasn't mad at God. I was just kind of, I was kind of worn out. I was a little bit bitter about the Jacob's Dream exit, I think. That was still kind of festering.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, just how, like, sometimes it's hard to, you know, to keep, okay, God, what do you want me to write about today? You know, sometimes it's a lot, you know, and with Biogenesis, we didn't really get into the lyrical side of that, but like, I write all the lyrics in Biogenesis and not as a control kind of way or a, you know, or look at me or nothing like that. But I just feel like that's my responsibility. I feel like that vision was placed on me. And therefore, it's my job to do that. And I don't really, it's not that other people can't write good. It's just that I just feel like that's my job. That's my thing that I need to do, you know? And sometimes that You know, there's a little bit of a burden sometimes, you know, to be honest. So I don't know. I kind of thought about what he said, and I make a long story short. I started seeing weird signs and just weird stuff. It just kind of felt like God was trying to get my attention. And I thought, okay, God, like, I get it. You know, you're not done with me, you know? Yeah. You're having fun doing this other band, but like, I have more to say through you, you know? And, that's when I decided to bring Bio back for the third time.
Yeah.
And we, ended up signing with Rox Records. And we did the Decadence Divine album with, by the way, the female drummer, Magenica, and her brother, Luke. And then the rest of their family ended up joining the band, which was weird. I didn't even know until I approached them. And they're like, well, hey, our brother, he plays keyboards, and he's all, blah, 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 you know, he's all like dream theater time. I'm like, geez, you know, I was like, man, you want to be in a band, you know? And so now all of a sudden we're symphonic on top of all the other elements that we do. And that album, to a lot of, it got us a lot of new fans, man. Like when we came out with A Decadence Divine, you're thinking, well, we released two albums before. Does people even care? You know, because it's not like we were Tourniquet or Deliverance where we have this long momentum and history of discography that we've built, you know?
Yeah.
It's really spotty. Hard. Yeah, it's really hard to come up with one record, disappear for a decade, and then try to make a comeback, which we tried to do.
And hope everyone's still there and gain.
Yeah, does anybody remember us? And even if they do they even care anymore? You know, are they still listening to us? You know?
Yeah.
We got a lot of new fans during that time, and we ended up making an EP called Black Widow. And then, unfortunately, had a big falling out with the family and the band, and just couldn't agree. I wanted to write an album about the Jim Jones cult known as the People's Temple. I wanted to expose that darkness and also tell a story about a survivor that goes from a brainwashed full-on believer in Jones to surviving the tragedy to what happens to him after and all that, and how he rebuilds his life, which is why the album was called Rise of the Phoenix, by the way. But they just didn't get it. They're, oh, it's too dark. How is that Christian? How everybody dies. How is that? That can't be Christian. And, you know, they were really putting their foot down and, well, if you do this, we're not going to be a part of it. And it's unfortunate. It is what it is. I mean, I love them. And, you know,
that theme for that album? Okay.
I did. It was supposed to be with them, but.
And that's a Biogenesis project.
Yes, sir.
With that. Yeah. Okay. I didn't realize that. And you have to forgive me. I'm learning a lot about your band, and that's what I love about doing this podcast is I discover a lot of stuff. I knew the name, but I don't know a lot about, so it's fun to learn. And I kind of want to wrap it up here, but the final thing I wanted to ask you about was obviously what you're currently kind of doing is working with a guy I just had on recently, Ryan Roebuck, who, man, he's super talented. I think he's a super talented guitarist. You guys got together with Vultures Gathering. Is that yes. What you guys,
yep.
How did that come together? Did Ryan approach you?
No, what happened was Andre Chang doing the Shamash and stuff like that. He wanted a clean vocalist to do a guest spot because he mostly did like thrash and death metal. He wanted somebody to, you know, on a song, just throw in a few lines or whatever. And somebody told him to contact me. So we get in contact with each other and then we start talking on the phone. We're just hitting it off. We're like laughing. They're like, man, you know, I wish you were down the road instead of all the way in Malaysia, you know? And he's like, man, you know what? We should do a project, like seriously. And he brought up Evergrey. He goes, I think your voice would be like great for like that Evergrey, Gothenburg, Sweden, you know, kind of gothic metal, you know. And I was like, all right, cool. So he writes a song, sends it to me. And I wrote lyrics and tracked it. And he's like, man, bro, we need to do an album. So short time later, he's telling me about Ryan. And he's like, I'm gonna try to get this Ryan guy in the band, man. That'd be so awesome. And then introduced me to Ryan. The three of us started talking, and it's like, hey, let's do it. So it came together very quickly. We poured over about 100 names or so and chose Vultures Gathering, and then that was it. All right, let's do a record. Let's just have some fun. I got on Ryan's case about calling Jacob's Dream Jacob's Ladder on your interview.
Did he do that or not? He
He
did it.
did.
I, you know, as funny as I think I texted someone the other day, and I get that confused too. I kept saying, I was like, why do I keep getting Jacob's Ladder stuck in my head? And someone else messaged me about it the other day and said Jacob something. They had something totally different. I'm like, man, we none of us can get it right, apparently.
I told him I was gonna call his man Situational Servant or something, but I was just messing with him.
So, you know, is there a future with doing more with Ryan or those guys, or
Man, I
is this
certainly
one?
hope so. I mean, it just dropped. It's brand new. People are kind of slowly taking it in. We'll see. He's a very busy guy. Ryan especially, he's got a lot going on with Motivic and Ritual Servant, and also he's gonna do what will probably, I'm gonna say it right here, and and I don't want to disappoint everybody, but to you Bio fans, I'm 99% sure this next Bio record that Ryan's gonna help me with, I'm pretty sure that's the final chapter for Bio.
Okay.
Unless, something I do not foresee, maybe God gives me another sign, who knows, maybe he calls me back to it. But at this time that I'm thinking this will be it. And I think we're gonna go out with a bang big time. But as far as Vultures, I could see another album eventually.
Yeah. Well,
But
let
right
me.
now we kind of have to take it one step at a time.
I don't want to pass dismiss what you just said with the bio thing. That doesn't mean, obviously, it doesn't sound like that means that's the end of your musical career. It's just
Correct. Yeah,
the
I'm not
end of
ready. I'm
bio.
not ready to retire yet.
Yeah. And is Biogenesis technically, I mean, like, you've gone through so many members, it's really technically just it's you at this point. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, on a smaller scale, like I'm the Dave Mustaine or the Jimmy Brown of Biogenesis.
Yeah. And, I mean, has that ever impacted you in the long run with all the member changes going
Oh,
through, as opposed
absolutely.
to just having that steady core, you know,
Well,
three
that was,
guys with you or whatever it might be?
yeah, that's a little, that's a, that's part of kind of what I was alluding to when I was saying all that pressure of being a founder, being on your shoulders all the time. And, and I know I have seen plenty of evidence that God has used bio many, many times. So I know there's a purpose for it that just goes beyond me just enjoying writing some music and tossing it out there. I've seen we had a song about suicide called The Pain You Left Behind, and we're playing in this little bar, and we play the song, and I said a few words about it because it's actually about a friend of mine that committed suicide back in 2005. But anyways, I come outside, the guy's just tears pouring, and he comes to talk to me, and it's just like, and that's not even close to the only example. I mean, there's just so many times where I'm like, man, God is doing something with this. This is not
Yeah.
about me being a rock star or trying to see how far I can go, or my band members trying to see how far they can go. It's never really been about that. If you reach a handful of people, you've done something.
Yeah, and I know we all go through hard times, and I'm not trying to bring anything up. I know you might be going through some struggles right now, and I hope you don't ever forget stuff like that, and realize the impact that you have, the positive impact you've had, such as that, on people, and hopefully you're going to keep going and have future impacts on people that are positive. And I know things are tough with everybody, and we go through these hard times,
Yeah, for
and
sure.
you feel like you're not going to come out of it at times. And you're talking about, like, the suicide song, and that might have been how your people feel before they do commit suicide, and
Right.
unfortunately, and trying to stick through things and wait for that better times to come is difficult. Not I wasn't putting that all on you. I know,
Oh, yeah.
everyone is kind of
Absolutely.
goes through their stuff. I've definitely been there. I had a buddy of mine texting me about that earlier, and just it's, man, you, it's tough to see your friends go through that, but we all kind of struggle silently at times too, or alone. And you know, I don't know. I went off a little tangent on what you said there, but
that's cool.
Yeah, you know, well, the point of that was just, look, you've made an impact on people. Sometimes you just don't realize
that's true
who you've touched. Or, you know, I think I've said something like Roger Martinez, whether he wants to admit it or not, he saved a lot of people. You know, he turned a lot of people into Christianity, whether he is probably maybe opposed to that. And hopefully maybe I get to talk to him sometime soon. And that would be something I'd like to ask him about. But, you know, you've made impacts. You will make future impacts. So I hope you continue, even though I know you kind of mentioned bio is probably going to come to an end. Just like we thought Motley Crue and Kiss were going to come to an end. We'll see.
Right. Who knows? Maybe something will change.
I wanted to ask before I closed out. Also, you're up there in Ohio. Have you been up to the Immortal Fest, or is that something you plan on going to?
I did. I went to the Immortal Fest. Got to see the Les Carlson and talk to him. And he had actually, you know, the funny thing is, I went to the Blood Good concert that happened at the same place before that.
Yeah.
And that ended up sadly being Michael Bloodgood's final show before. Yeah. You know, tragedy struck there, and we and Vultures Gathering were already working on the cover of Blood Good that we did, which was America. And the next thing you know, I'm hearing about his struggles, and then eventually we got the horrible news that he had passed on. And then I remember we released a song, we dedicated it to Michael and everything, and we even you know, tried to get proceeds for the song, like $1 to, you know, to get the song early and all the stuff. And we just, you know, sent that money off to Michael's family, you know, at that time. And
that's awesome.
And so it, you know, an honor that was already an honor to cover a Blood Good song just became so much more important and so much more impactful. But then Les Carlson was just telling us how much he loved it, which meant a lot to us. I went to the last one as well, and ran into some bio fans, and that was really cool. I may go to this next one. I've been on stage with Deliverance a couple of times.
Yeah.
Sang some duets with Jimmy. So maybe he'll throw me back up there again.
How far are you from Versailles?
Oh man, hour and a half ish.
That's not bad. Like. That's not bad at all. A
lot of these people are like, oh man, how am I going to get my flight and, you know, my hotel over here? And I'm like, I'm just driving an hour and a half.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. I'm hoping to be there at the September, I guess that's Labor Day or whatever the weekend would be for that one. I'm hoping to get to go to that. I already kind of booked the hotel, so finances, we'll see. Then they put the other show out, like you're talking about with these other guys. I'm a big fan of Theocracy. Okay, also, yeah. I'm like, oh my gosh, that's going to be a great lineup too. But I want to see a lot of these guys I've never got to see before. And that I've never seen White Cross, even though I know, you know, Scott's not in the band. You know, so I never got to see with Scott and then Les and all these other guys. And I'm friends with Stace Roberts from The Brave and those guys. And hopefully I'll be there. So, you know,
that'll be awesome. Curious. Might bump into you.
Yeah, hopefully you can, you know, get together and everyone will kind of be a nice meet and greet with a lot of people, because it is a cool community that we're part of, I feel like. And I know it's a small kind of genre, but it's a cool one.
It is, for sure. The
final kind of thing I want to ask you, is there anything else going on that you have plans musically, anything that people can look forward to that, I mean, I don't know if it may be in the works or a definite.
The only thing I have on deck right now, honestly, is the next bio album. It's going to be called Hell's Carnival. I already have a cover for it and everything, but I haven't revealed that cover yet. Ryan Robick is supposed to do most of the writing, and actually Charlie from that band, the girl I was telling you about earlier from Sweden, she might play on the album as well. She did do a couple vocals on the Vultures album, actually. I forgot to mention that. But anyways, other than that, it's going to be a great album. I mean, if you got Ryan involved, you already know it's going to be great just by that alone. He's so eclectic. He can go in and out of, you know, one genre and another and make it seem like it was all one thing, you know, and that's what Vi is about. So he's perfect for it. After that, I really don't know, man. We'll see. I know I'm not ready to retire. I'm really proud of the Vultures album, and we'll see. You know, maybe the label will want to do another Vultures album in a couple of years. We'll see how it shakes out.
Well, that's cool, man. It's cool that you have such a variety of music with the history and everything. And something else I meant to ask you was, have you talked to Steve Rowe anytime soon, or has it been years ago?
Man, honestly, I wish I hadn't talked to him in a very, very long time. Really missed the bloke. He's a really, really good guy, like I said.
Yeah, and I know he's had a lot of even more, unfortunately, medical stuff going on. He's like at the top of the list of guys I'd love to have on the show. I don't know if it'll happen.
Bio actually covered a Mortification song, Symbiosis, from the Blood World album.
Oh, yeah?
And he just happens to say the word biogenesis a couple times in that song. So I think that's why we picked it. But yeah, there was a group of people that wanted to make like a tribute album to Mortification.
Oh, okay.
And they wanted us to be a part of it. So we recorded it, but then it never took off. But we released it. We ended up releasing it on the Black Widow EP, I believe, or at least versions of the Black Widow EP. And we also did a Deliverance cover, Flesh and Blood, on there.
Where can people find that at?
You can find it through Rocks Records. That's the label that released it. So anything, he's got that stuff out. I'm sure you can find Spotify or whatever, YouTube, if you want to just hear some of the stuff. Yeah.
Well, that's cool, man. Well, hey, Jazz, I appreciate you joining the podcast. It's been fun learning about your history. A lot of interesting stuff there, and hopefully people find it as interesting as I do. I'm sure they will, because the cool connections and things you got to experience. So I appreciate you joining the podcast. I always let my guests have the last word. If there's anything you want to say to people that have supported you throughout the years, or just new time, you know, folks kind of finding out about you, you know, I'll let you have the last word.
I appreciate that, man. And, you know, I'd like to thank you as well. You know, thanks for reaching out to me, and it's an honor. You know, I'd just like to say to the fans, you know, I love you guys, even whether I know you personally or not. I know I wouldn't have been able to do none of these things that we talked about without you guys and girls. So I just wanted to say that. You know, I kind of want to say, like, one of the things that I've seen in the Christian scene lately is a lot of people kind of gravitate to the remakes of old albums a lot, and they're, you know what I mean, and some of the newer stuff is kind of overlooked. So, like, you know, I would just ask people just to, you know, just try to think of it, not just my stuff either. Like, I want to make that clear. I'm not just saying, oh, you're the Vultures Gathering, you better know. But you know, we're very fortunate, all of us, that there are still artists that are still willing to keep on. You know, it's a lot of work, man. It's a lot of work, sometimes a lot of money, a lot of time away from family. You know, I have an autistic daughter, you know, so anytime I'm recording and doing all that, I'm kind of taking some time away from that. So just try to keep that in mind. It's not easy to do. And, you know, just, I don't know, just try to support these bands a little bit. Check them out a little more. Give them, you know, I mean, these bands, Barren Cross, Deliverance, all those guys, man, I love it. It's great. It's wonderful, you know? And that was like the golden age or whatever, but that doesn't mean some of these newer bands don't deserve your attention. So I just want to put that out there. And God bless you guys and girls. And there you go, metal.